Welcome to The Agent Effect. I'm your host, Paul Jarrett, and today I'm speaking to Benjamin Larson, who is the lead for AI safety at the World Economic Forum, where he focuses on advancing responsible adoption, evaluation, and governance of AI agents. He's also the lead author of the World Economic Forum report, AI Agents in Action, Foundations for Evaluation and Governance, which we're going to discuss today. Welcome to the show, Ben.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Before we get stuck into the report, perhaps you can give the listeners a brief overview of your background, what brought you to the WEF, and what your role encompasses.
Yeah, that sounds great. So in terms of my background, I've been in AI governance now since, I believe, back in 2017, I started a PhD on the topic where I was comparing approaches in the US and China. Back then, of course, we were talking much more about AI strategy, national strategies, and so on. Mm-hmm. Versus now the field, and I've seen that over these last 9 years or so, it's really matured a lot from moving into kind of what does it take to actually establish a third-party ecosystem around auditing and assessment, figuring out, well, how do we move from sound policies and regulations into kind of downstream ecosystem adoption, and also what's coming from the private sector in terms of all of these new mechanisms, and what's, of course, the big confounder in this picture is the underlying foundation models as they continue to rapidly develop. These past 4 years, I've been an AI safety lead at the World Economic Forum based here in San Francisco, and I work in a multi-stakeholder way with a number of partners to develop best practices coming predominantly from the private sector at the frontier of technological development. So in this case, we've been working on AI agents for the past year and a half and have two reports out. And we're currently working on a third report also coming out in the spring of this year.
Fantastic. Well, yeah, it sounds great. Can you talk a little bit about, you know, what benefits you offer, like members of the World Economic Forum, and like, you know, why should I be a member?
Yeah, definitely. So yeah, we're a member-driven organization, mm-hmm. and we have more than 900 members from the private sector. We also engage with civil society, with academia, and certainly also with policymakers. Mm-hmm. And we are a unique institution when it comes to collaboration across the public and the private sectors, especially. And if we take a step back and we think about AI, we think about all of the tremendous upsides that are associated with AI. It's a true general purpose technology, but there's also a lot of externalities associated with this fast moving technology. And for us to fully and carefully vet some of these externalities, it's very important that we come to agreement on what are the best practices. And here, this is not something that the private sector or the public sector can do alone. It's something where we need this multi-stakeholder approach to fully figuring out how do we best anticipate some of the underlying risks, how do we mitigate them, and how do we ensure that we harness all of the upsides so that they can flourish throughout society. And the World Economic Forum, we have what's called the AI Global Alliance, where we have a number of different work streams. So our work on safety and agents and frontier technologies is just one work stream. Mm-hmm. We're also looking at applications, at energy and regional competition and collaboration, at policies and regulations, and so much more. So that is the unique kind of opportunity that the World Economic Forum brings to this AI governance space.
Okay. Well, maybe we could talk a bit about agents. So is it the year of the AI agent, in your opinion? Like we've heard a lot from a lot of companies like Dreamforce, Agentforce, and so on last year. There was a lot of groundswell around it. But is this the year that AI agents truly take hold and become, you know, present in the enterprise?
Yeah, it's a good question. And Paul, I think we've moved beyond the year of the agents to truly need to embrace the decade of the agent now.
Okay.
I think when we first started looking at AI agents back in 2024, there was a lot of noise, there was a lot of hype. But then last year in 2025, this is the first year where I've truly seen that we are starting to mature. We're moving from pilots, we're moving into actual productions. We're seeing some of the early movers scale that adoption. And I think over time, there's going to be a long tail also as some of the original kind of areas of brittleness in terms of the technology, how they would kind of fail at the edges in terms of implementation. There's a lot of underlying maturation going on, not only in terms of models that, of course, exhibit greater reasoning capabilities, but especially at the orchestration layer of things. There's been a lot of maturation. I think the next big step here, that is looking at closer kind of accuracy when it comes to calling different tools, simplifying that process as well. Of course, there's maturation when it comes to the underlying protocols as well. But I think the big confounder here is also the evolution of memory and developing those capabilities further over time as they come together into increasingly capable agentic systems.
Yeah, so I think I agree. It is the decade of agents. Well, perhaps we could talk a little bit about your report now, AI Agents in Action. Can you give a brief overview of what it is, what its goals are, and who it's for?
Yeah, definitely. That's a great question. So when we first started this work about a year and a half ago, this was in the middle or early 2024, we were already seeing, oh, there's so many people that are talking about agents. But we also quickly realized that people are talking about wildly different things and what we before simply referred to as AI or generative AI. Some observers started to referring to that as AI agents or agentic AI, essentially. So we thought it's very important that we double down on definitions here. Mm. What do we even mean when we're talking about an agent?
Exactly.
And then talk about different kinds of agents.
Yeah.
And that was the first publication that we had in December of 2024.
Well, so how do you define an agent? Let me ask you that.
Yeah, how to define an agent as a system that's able to make autonomous decisions and that has an influence on its environment. But we could also, another definition would be that many kind of current AI agents that are essentially based on large language models. Mm-hmm. So another definition could be it's an LLM in a loop with access to tools that then is able to influence or have an impact on its environment.
Okay.
With the second report that we launched a couple of months ago, in November of last year, 2025, we doubled down on what is it that all adopting organizations, they need to know in terms of how do you classify an agent, how to think about agent autonomy and authority, how to evaluate an agent, how to think about risk assessment and progressive governance and practice. What does that look like? And again, the need that we're seeing here is that there's a lot of top-down pressure. Like, there's been a lot of noise that creates a lot of hype, that creates a lot of pressure, mm-hmm. a lot of pressure to adopt the latest and the greatest, but without necessarily understanding what is it that's being adopted and implemented. And this is our latest publication. It's kind of targeted at that. It's aimed to kind of fill in some of the blanks and ensuring that both the leaders and technologists and a range of adopters, and we believe that there will be a lot of adoption of agents in the time to come, but that they have a sufficiently deep understanding of one, the technology, and then two, the conceptual kind of frameworks for how to think about agents in the time to come.
So your report states that 82% of organizations plan to integrate AI agents within the next 1 to 3 years. How do we know which business problems are actually suitable for agentic systems versus simple automation or RPG?
I'd say a rule of thumb that I have here is that if you are engaging in complex, multi-step decision-making processes with some degree of uncertainty, then it could be a good idea and approach to perhaps adopt an agent. But I think if you have a kind of very simple and repetitive workflow that's very deterministic, mm-hmm. then I would say robotic process automation is definitely the way to go. And automation should also not be confused with agents. So this ability to take decisions and act on an environment and that would have a subsequent effect or influence. I'd say if it's a more narrow defined kind of use case, there's a prompt input and an output, but it's always a human kind of sitting at the helm. Then I would say a co-pilot would probably be the way to go.
Can you perhaps like dig deeper there? Like, can you give me some specific examples of RPG versus where you would apply agents?
Yeah, well, maybe if we could take an example of a call center.
So yeah.
You'd have traditional call center agents, and there's been automation in this field for a long time. But mm-hmm. we've been moving from kind of static and more simplistic decision trees, taking certain decisions, and then based on those decisions, moving on to the next node in the tree. Mm-hmm. Versus right now, when you have LLM-powered agents, you have the ability to also discern what is the intent of the customer, of the user, how does that map up to what the customer, the user is asking for, what is the overview of a range of policies or services that a company delivers. So there's a greater range of freedom for the call center agent in this example to then match, well, what is the intent? What is the kind of scope of the inquiry mm-hmm. with the right kind of solutions, or to elevate, well, whenever the agent is unable to, of course, address a concern or consideration, and to elevate that up so that you would have a human in the loop that could step in, essentially.
So let's talk a little bit about human in the loop. Obviously, when deploying agents, there's great benefits, but there's also great risks. Your report talks about four themes of classification, evaluation, evaluating risks, and governance. Can you talk a little bit to me about that, and you know, how enterprises should be thinking about risk?
So the first step is classification. Mm-hmm. So here again, we start with the context, and then from that context, we have to decide and determine what kind of use case is it even that is needed, and we also have to decide, well, is an agentic use case the best solution, or could we start with something that's more simpler? And what kind of the workflow, what part of the workflow is deterministic mm-hmm. versus probabilistic? And then we move up a little bit and we look at what is the intended autonomy of the system? What is its ability to act or take actions? And that's very important, because those actions would be the key for why we need an agent. Mm-hmm. Then you have to look at authority. What is the authority of the system? And here you can think about authority in terms of access rights. What kind of data sets, databases, information, and tools does the system, is it authorized to use? The analogy that we sometimes use is whenever you onboard a new colleague, a human being into an organization, we don't give that human being the keys, the access rights to all parts of the organization. Right. And you can think about an agent in a similar way. There's two other kind of steps that we're looking at. So the role, is it a generalist system or is it a specialist system that must have very unique knowledge? Mm-hmm. And then its level of predictability, is it deterministic, or which parts of the system is probabilistic? So all of this, it goes into the classification, including understanding the environment that the system is operating in. Mm-hmm. Is that dynamic? Does it change a lot? Or is it static and, again, more predictable? Because then when you can sufficiently classify all of these elements, then you have a much more grounded understanding of the system that you then continue to take into these other steps that we formulate in this paper, moving on to evaluation, risk assessment, and governance.
So how important is a real-time observability layer, in your opinion?
It's front and center, but again, it comes down to how do we classify this system, yeah. and how sort of simplistic is the agent mm-hmm. versus how advanced is the agent. But I would say as a common baseline recommendation, and what we also say in the report, is that you have to start with traceability. You have to look at agent logs. You have to assign IDs to agents. Mm-hmm. You have to look at chain of thought monitoring and so on. And this is really key to understanding and unlocking, well, why did an agent make a certain decision? And if you can kind of open the logs and you can see, oh, this is the underlying reasoning for why this decision was made, or this is the underlying reasoning for why the agent did actually kind of fail or made a wrong kind of step in this sequence, in this workflow, that is critical, and that's part of the evaluation process as well. So looking at how capable is the system, what is its task success rate, how successful is it in calling different tools and so on,
right?
So that you have that groundedness already in the evaluation step, but it feeds all the way through to risk assessment and governance as well.
And do you think agents are a good way of kind of monitoring agents? I mean, it sounds kind of crazy, but could they be a good use for this responsible AI layer?
I think they are great use, yeah. And we already see that in terms of LLMs as a judge. So agents observing other agents, or LLMs rating the output of other agents. Mm. And if we, of course, thinking a few steps ahead now, but if our kind of hypothesis and theory of change say, that is that we're moving towards a future where we're going to have an increasing amount of AI agents and agentic systems in time to come, then oversight is going to be it has to be a multi-layered approach, of course. And mm-hmm. one layer is to have automated oversight, where you have agents monitoring other agents. What, of course, is also hard and tricky, and there could be some biases inbuilt into the structure here is, well, how do we then determine whether the monitoring agent is actually monitoring what it's supposed to and, yeah. And the output of that? And there's also a question of capabilities in terms of what kind of capabilities, what kind of underlying models is the monitoring system based on versus the model that it's observing. So I think part of the solution has to be technical, simply because mm-hmm. we're moving towards an inflection point at some, perhaps in the medium term future, where we simply will have too many agentic workloads for humans to kind of open the hood and look through all of the logins and interactions. Mm-hmm. So you need that automated element. But you also have to counterbalance that with an organizational structure where we have to decide what are the critical gateways where you absolutely need to have a human in the loop mm-hmm. so that we can assure that oversight is kind of a mediated process, both technically, organizationally, and also thinking about human end users.
So when we think about scaling agentic systems in the enterprise, how do we balance scale with innovation? Like, we don't want to restrict innovation, but we also want to make sure that we're deploying AI responsibly. How should enterprise be thinking about that?
Definitely. And I think, again, how we think about it is that it has to be a key step early in the process, that mm-hmm. governance is actually an enabler. Because if you don't have the right kind of accuracy or assurance in place, especially as we're dealing with probabilistic systems, mm-hmm. then things could go wrong and there could be unintended outputs. Having this kind of tiered governance structure in terms of layers and different mechanisms in place would help alleviate that and would help assure that the agent that's actually being adopted and deployed, that you can say with a great degree of certainty that it's operating as intended and it doesn't move down kind of unforeseen pathways or respond in ways that it was not architected to do. And again, this kind of layered process in terms of governance, as we're seeing it, it starts with traceability and logging mm-hmm. of interactions and agent IDs. Yeah. Then it moves up to kind of having a human oversight layer and perhaps also automated oversight layer in place. And then the third tier here, that would be to look at, well, if we're dealing with kind of agents in critical systems or in sectors such as healthcare and finance and so on, you actually need to have escalation pathways and you need to have kind of organizational practices and structures in place that are much more tight mm-hmm. and that are entirely linked to the underlying architecture and the kind of gateways that you have constructed along the agent system. And here, again, dealing with any form of critical decision or critical sector or scenario, it's very important to say that these systems, they can still be fallible and you need to have a human guarantee in place in terms yeah. of this is how the system is architected and this is how it ultimately responds to some of these more sensitive or risky questions or scenarios.
How important do you think an off switch is?
I think that it's a good question. it always comes back to kind of like, yeah. Or what happens if the system is engaging in unintended kind of decision sequences? I think it's important to have that built into, well, when we are architecting this system, like, again, going back to the risk assessment, what could potentially go wrong? Mm-hmm.
So depending on the use case, there's obviously a lot of different ways to measure the effectiveness of an agentic network. In the report, you talk about Agent Bench and SWE Bench, for example. Can you tell us a little bit more about these?
Great question. So what we're seeing is that there are many more, I'll call them generic or research-based or capability-based benchmarks that are coming out. And that's a great thing mm-hmm. because that enables us to benchmark relative capabilities of some of these systems. For example, in SWE Bench or SWE Bench, you mentioned, it would be to look at, well, how good is an agentic system at solving GitHub issues in mm-hmm. Open source code repositories and so on. And that tells us something about the relative capability of an agent in terms of coding, for example,
mm-hmm.
then you have Agent Bench and you have other capability-based benchmarks that would be able to map and sequence how well is the system at performing a given task. You have benchmarks that are looking very specific at, for example, how well is an agentic system at ordering a flight ticket, for example, which is something that's rudimentary, but it tells us about the relative progress of the field alongside a generic benchmark.
Yeah.
And that's a very valuable signal. But what we've been discovering in a lot of our conversations with our community when we developed this paper is that it's very critical to have in-context use case evaluation. And that's something that we've seen in this work, that developers and adopters, they work closely together
mm-hmm.
to creating the right kind of in-context benchmarks that is measuring actively what the agent it was designed to do. And so that you can say with a high degree of certainty and accuracy that, yes, the system is actually performing as intended. Of course, some of these capabilities in terms of constructing benchmarks in-house, they can be expensive as well.
Mm.
And that's why it's important for developer and adopter to work together to figure out, well, what may a good kind of solution be that then meets, yes, we can actually measure what we intend to measure here. Yes, we can say with a high degree of accuracy that the system is performing as intended.
Do you think you're going to get benchmark systems, you know, appearing for different types of use cases? So for example, you know, I don't know, call center optimization, there'd be a benchmark for that versus like financial implications, implementations, or, you know, other types of logistics or support.
I think we'll definitely see that evolve, because we have a number of tasks that would be generic enough that we all perform them on a day-to-day basis, but we don't think a lot about it. It's simply something that's ingrained. This is how you do it. This is how I book a flight ticket.
Mm-hmm.
This is how I look for example, in my shopping behaviors, whatever it may be. But all of that knowledge that we think is pretty rudimentary, it still needs to be codified into an agentic system. And I think there are certain tasks that are generic enough so that you could construct benchmarks across different sectors and industries saying that this is how a standardized operating procedure would be handled, for example, in operations management, whatever it may be, that we can have kind of these generalized and generic benchmarks. I should mention as well with benchmarks, what's so important is also that we engage in a mindset shift, because usually when we're looking at a benchmark, it tends to be a one and done. So does it have this capability? How accurate is it? How well does it perform?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it performs satisfactorily. So yes, it meets the criteria.
So for the CIOs, the CTOs, chief AI officers listening, can you outline three recommendations that you would provide them with when they're thinking about deploying AI agents at scale?
I would say certainly change management is something that's often overlooked, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And the importance of change management is critical. And again, back to my earlier conversation, back to my earlier point in terms of definitions and this top-down pressure to adopt, there has to be also top-down buy-in in terms of when you are adopting an agent into an organization, that essentially means that you are, with a lot of likelihood, you are changing a certain task or a workflow that maybe a human used to do 10 or 20 or 30% of that workflow, whatever it may be.
Mm-hmm.
And that means that there's both some time that's being freed up for more productive uses, of course,
mm-hmm.
but there's also a vacuum that's being kind of filled in and kind of now it's substituted for an agentic system doing. Then I would say evaluation and risk assessment is critical, because you have to understand kind of both when you start with classification of the system and then evaluation and risk assessment, exactly how it performs, and especially this time component, because that feeds into also the organizational change and restructuring over time. And then the third point I would say is, and we talked about this, continuous monitoring and oversight. That's really critical, because without that, again, you have the evaluation metrics, but you need to kind of pin that to what are the right kind of organizational processes and oversight mechanisms that we need to have in place that are very much tied to the specific sector and use case. So I'd say those three would be my key recommendations.
Okay, That's great. I mean, maybe you could just give us like a little bit of a kind of insight into what some of your community members are thinking around agentic AI. You know, where are they seeing the biggest successes, and you know, where are some of the areas that they think, you know, agents will come into their own this year? Like, do you have a sense of what you're hearing?
I would say in terms of some of the key takeaways that we're hearing, and, and also the pathway towards successfully rolling out agents, is starting small and, and building up from then on, testing with kind of very specific, perhaps more deterministic workflows that would be closer aligned with robotic process automation or so on. But then to build up gradually from there on and explore what are further use cases, how to build that internal muscle in terms of evaluation and in terms of having this mindset shift in terms of, okay, now we have an agent that's doing this workflow, so we can kind of increase our productivity, or we can hire more people in a certain sector or element because we are now freed up to do and more things, we have more information, whatever it may be.
So start small and then build up as you go.
That would be a key step that we are hearing. Yeah.
So finally, where do you see the future of AI agents headed? You know, we've got things like MCP. We've got a lot of new technologies that are coming out that are now well established. Would love your insights onto where do you think the future lies.
I think that's the question that's on top of everybody's mind right now.
Yeah.
I think. Agentic commerce is a big one. So Google, they just released a new protocol for agentic commerce as well. And of course, I have the agent to payments protocol as well. So I think if we're moving towards kind of a future, again, as I said earlier in this conversation, where we can imagine that we have an increasing amount of agents that are able to solve different tasks or workflows, then of course it's not only commerce, but we have to extrapolate one step beyond that and say what that kind of enables, but also what is a part of that conversation is that then you have agents that start to interact with other agents. And of course, MCP and A2A are great protocols for enabling this as well, but they're also underlying and unresolved and open-ended questions surrounding what does semantic alignment between agents, what does that look like? Yeah. What does competition or collusion or collaboration between agents, what does that look like? How do you bake that into protocols?
Yeah.
I mentioned booking a flight ticket earlier, but here we also have to look at the underlying reasoning power and capabilities of an agent, especially if they're engaging in a negotiated process. Then what is the underlying reasoning capabilities of the agents? And if one agent has kind of greater reasoning capabilities, would the other agent then be able to persuade it to, I don't know, buy a more expensive flight ticket? What could that look like? So I think there's a number of open-ended questions and areas and issues that we need to debate in much more detail. Here, I think it's also important to have an agent registry within organizations. It may not be necessary if you're only adopting 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 agents, but if you have a number of agentic workflows that are diffusing throughout an enterprise organization, it's very important to have that agent registry and then to look more carefully at how do we scrutinize different agent IDs when it comes to collaboration with other agents in this multi-agent ecosystem. And I think that also has a lot of implications in terms of assurance, in terms of oversight, and in terms of what are the decisions that are being made between multi-agent systems within an enterprise versus outside of an enterprise. So calling up other APIs across other organizations and enterprises, and also thinking through what are the security dimensions that are being introduced in as agents they continue to proliferate.
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating, isn't it? I mean, I can see this world where we're going to have to learn how to market to agents, right? And it's just a whole new world that's waiting out there. And I know SEO is being, you know, overturned by, you know, other agents right now in the summaries you get when you type in the Google chatbot. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens in the next few years about where it goes and how we change the way we work around this agentic workflows. So
Definitely. It's a very exciting time, and it's a very exciting area. And I also hope that more people will take on some of these very big questions that we do need to solve. And again, I think this multi-stakeholder approach towards thinking about what are the kind of protocols, how does that translate into downstream standards that we all have to agree on so that we can, again, harness all of the upsides of this agentic, multi-agentic future that's definitely coming in this decade of the agents.
Fantastic. Well, thank you very much, Ben. It's been a pleasure to have you on the show. I wish you all the success with your next report. Can you give us a hint what the new report's going to be on?
Yeah, definitely. So I mentioned with the first report, so that was on setting definitions. Second report on kind of establishing a conceptual framework for classification and evaluation and governance.
Yeah.
Now we're putting that into practice. So we're coming up with a practical, action-oriented, functional playbook for what adoption it looks like. And again, we operate under the assumption that many enterprises, they will be adopting agents in the years to come. So what do they need to know already now? And this publication, it'll be out likely around March or April of this year.
Okay, great. Well, I can't wait to read it. Thank you. I appreciate you being on the Agent Effect.
Thanks so much, Paul.